I begin today by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we're recording this podcast, and I pay my respect to their elders past and present. I extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples listening today. It's Cultural Diversity Week, and this week there is also International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. In this episode, we will explore racial discrimination. Racial discrimination still hurts people every day, and there are also good stories of positive change happening. We will hear personal stories from local residents and workers in Richmond, and they share their views of living in Melbourne. In another part, we'll talk to Andrea. Andrea runs workshops on unconscious bias. Unconscious bias means hidden thoughts that influence our behaviour towards different groups of people. And often we do not realise that we have these thoughts. So Andrea will explain how to increase awareness of unconscious bias. She will also share ways for people and workplaces to reduce unconscious bias. I ask community members to share their thoughts on how Australian society views and treats people from diverse cultures. And here are some of their stories.
My name is Jinghua Mo from the People's Republic of China. I already migrated to Australia more than 25 years. I like here. I am Australian, you know. I have language barrier, but hard to mix Aussie. But doesn't matter. I'm because I'm open and sunshine, no trouble with the people. You know, I'm lucky.
I always go out on the street, and now I almost always meet people around me who are friendly and helpful. But I've never encountered awkward situations that make me uncomfortable anymore. Why do people come and get to know me? People tell me all kinds of stories. So when I first came over, I didn't know anything. I didn't encounter anything that was bad. This is just luck. One time at Fitzroy, I had period pain. I sat down and around 6 or 7 p.m. in the evening, I saw an Australian lady come to me and asked me, "Are you okay?" And the way she asked was so caring and friendly, made me feel very emotional. So those things make me very happy.
So I was working as a makeup artist for a luxury French brand. So this particular brand at that time was attracting certain type of demographic, certain type of look, certain type of women, and usually Caucasian women around 40, 30, 40, 50 and above years old. My manager told me at that time she received a phone call to say, "Adila, I received a phone call from a customer who said, I want to come in today to top up my cosmetics, but I do not want to be served by the dark one." And yeah, obviously that feeling make me feel very, I don't know how to say. I worked for that company for 5 years and I've served hundreds, thousands of customers, and that was probably one incident. But it's something that I remember for a long time. It makes you question whether, is it my service? Was it my service? Was it something that I said? Or is it just my appearance that made this lady so afraid to come to the shop?
Hi, my name is Lul. Hi, my name is Maya. I have always had long hair and I've always been very like protective of it.
Yes.
Mainly because like my mom's super protective of it as much as I am, because she's like, I raised that hair as much as I raised you. So I went to a hairdresser. It was the first time I ever went to a hairdresser. I was maybe like 14 years old. You know, I tell them, look, like I've got curly hair, but my hair, like it looks different. The length changes when it's curly and when it's straight.
Yep.
they're like, yeah, we've got you. We've dealt with all types of hair. And then, like, they open up my hair. My hair back then was really thick as well.
Yes.
So they weren't expecting that thickness and that length. And they were like, I was like, yeah, I just want my split ends cut. You know, just something nice, simple, split ends. They start cutting it. They start cutting it. And I'm like, okay. And then I was like, okay, so I also want it to be straightened and, like, you know, done well. So at this point, I'm not seeing my hair. Like, I'm not looking at it. I'm just looking at my phone. Like, I'm distracted. Until it gets to the final point where they're like, they straighten my hair, they like the little cuts. I'm like, oh, they did it so well. Like, oh my God, look at my hair, so pretty. And then a few days later, I go and I like wash my hair and then it's like different length. And I'm like, wait a minute, no, no, no. Like, this front part was like insanely short.
Yeah.
Then I would have wanted it to be with like curly hair. Like, they only factored my hair how it would look like when it was straightened, but they didn't factor it how it would look like when it was curly. I think that's more so in terms of, like, lack of education.
Mm.
In an ideal world, I think, in when they're going, a lot of hairdressers go to, what, beauty school, right? They're, like, they do their training, they get their certificate. They should have training to look at all types of hair because we live in Australia, which is a multicultural society.
Mm.
You should be able to cater to any person that walks into your hair salon, that unless you're very high end and you're like, we only do this, like we're very niche to this kind of thing, then cool, you've stated that from the beginning. But if you are, you have this huge, like multiple chain store, you should, like, I think, yeah, you should be able to understand and have training there in place to be able to handle all different types of clients. There's more stores open, more chances of people from other cultures coming in.
Mm. That is so interesting because, yeah, we have to, like, journey it to very distant shore places. Like, it's crazy, like, 30 to 40 minutes on a good day away for my hair just to be done, where I know there's, like, numerous hair salons around me and none of them could cater to my hair, you know? I've prepared actually a quick story.
Mm-hmm.
I've came to this country a little bit later than a lot of people, like in my early teens, without any pre-prep schools or nothing. So there was not much of a knowledge, including not being able to speak English as well. At first, the first school that I got to after I finished my English language course was pretty okay. It was really diverse. So due to changing locations, after I moved here, there was a very good advanced school that struck me and my mum, simply because girls' college, my mum was like, yeah, this is good for, especially from your cultural background or religious background, this is a good school, it's only girls, no distractions, nothing, you know? And we thought that would cater more to us because despite the fact that the school did not have a lot of people who were coloured based, let alone people from my background. So there were like two or three black girls after me. I did struggle with that school a lot. It got to a point where I had to leave because number one, there were a lot of lack of knowledge in my culture. There was like a lot of lack of knowledge. Students were constantly asking very like arrogant questions, but you can't blame them. They also didn't have no knowledge. Nobody prepared them with dealing with students like us from our backgrounds who have very, very different practices. People who religiously practice praying in school, who cover up more modestly, you know, and they just had questions, you know. I would also have questions in return because I did not have knowledge on their culture either. So in that case, I wouldn't blame them. But where it was very difficult is teachers didn't bother to cater to my lacks, didn't bother to provide me a lot of support. And then the exams were coming and then it's like, deal it with your own, you know? It got to a point where a lot of kids were also making fun of me because I didn't even understand the basics of the subjects. One of the most difficult part of it was I only understood basics of English. So that means I was not advanced enough where you can provide a textbook to me and I'll understand what it's talking about. So I was too busy every time a textbook was provided to me or a teacher was discussing about the topic with the students, literally Googling what the words meant. It got to a point where I had to go complain to my mom, spoke to the teachers, and there was also language barriers with my mother. They did not provide to bring translators. That's crazy. Yeah.
That's insane.
Like, I'm over here using broken English. I'm like, yeah, you know? But yeah, eventually I left that school. Biggest life impact. They made me despise education. Also made me feel like I was intellectually very disabled. So yeah, that was definitely, well, the happy ending to it was I did leave that school and I did find a way better school that had a lot of kids from my background who have similar problems to me, who are also being catered towards, you know, a lot of supports were provided. And I did manage to leave education on a good note.
Yeah.
You've listened to stories from people in community about facing discrimination or just their stories about living in Melbourne. Now we'll talk to Andrea about unconscious bias. Unconscious bias is a way to understand the meaning behind some of these experiences of racial discrimination.
My name is Andrea and I'm a trainer and e-learning developer at CEH.
All right. So the word unconscious bias, what does that mean for people who might not know or have heard of it?
Yeah. So unconscious bias describes the idea that we have a quick thought when we might see or hear somebody. And what we do with that thought is we make a quick assumption about them. And we decide what they need or what they want in a service or what they might need from us based on what group they belong to or which country they come from or their ethnicity or another part of their identity. So this assumption can be tricky because it groups people together without really asking them as an individual what they might need or what they might believe in a topic or on a certain subject.
What do you think is the most common bias?
Our most common biases or quick thoughts, and it's usually based on a person's sexuality or how they define their sexuality, somebody's gender, ethnicity, or cultural background, tends to be one of those four when we're making an assumption. You know, I'd like to have a disclaimer and say that we all have biases and assumptions that we make, and it's quite common and natural and normal. So the first step is really to acknowledge that that we do this and start to get closer to understanding our own personal biases by becoming a little bit more aware of them. And that's the first thing that we focus on. When we reflect on where we come from, we often understand other people a lot better. So a big part of the workshop is that self-reflection piece. And the workshops focus also on where biases lead to, and that there are some sort of generalizations that we make that can be helpful when we're just testing out a theory. But there's also some biases that can lead to things like stereotypes or discrimination. So we discuss these ideas a lot more in the workshops, and we help you find solutions so that you can reduce your biases. So it's really an approach that helps you to understand where you come from and how you can, you know, better help other people just by reducing your biases.
So unconscious bias is in the back of our brain, and so we're not aware of it. And I'm wondering if in your workshops there's ever a time when someone might realize something that surprises themselves even. They have a realization.
So one lady at a workshop said once that she had some clients who were always late. And then she told us that she would book extra time for them in advance. And then from then on, every client that booked in with the same cultural background as those clients, she would book them in for longer periods. When this lady was telling us this story or this example, I could see other people who came from that same background starting to feel uncomfortable. So even though this participant was trying to tell us something good that she was doing, that bias still led to upset other people and make other people feel uncomfortable. So framing is really important, and not singling out people, even when you're trying to do something good, can be really important for reducing some of those harmful thoughts and those harmful stereotypes.
I guess that's the challenge with judgments, is that it's not in front of your conscious awareness. So when people feel marginalized, it's not even on a conscious level in the room. because it's all unspoken and it's just a feeling in the air that you got to address or ignore.
Yeah, yeah. So some of the stuff that I've come to learn over time, our judgments become based on what other people tell us or what we tell ourselves about a certain group of people. And it's often not good to use the lens of ourselves or someone else, because that's kind of like mind reading. And mind reading is not an accurate way to understand the needs of a group or an individual. And one of the best ways really is to ask people what they need. And that way they are not judged or defined by where they come from, their sexuality, their gender, their culture, their ethnicity, or anything else for that matter. And they're really individualized, and they can start to feel comfortable that they're being asked for their opinion just based on themselves alone and not their group.
So how can workplaces and people keep learning and being aware of unconscious bias after the workshop is over?
Well, one of the main key ideas is being really curious and always asking yourself that you wonder, asking yourself, I wonder. So that's a concept called constructive uncertainty. So you're looking to see whether the assumptions that you're making are actually correct. And sometimes they might be, and they might be good and helpful. Like that could be booking an interpreter for a group of people that you assume don't speak English. And sometimes that can be quite useful. And that's one scenario where it works out quite well. But when we make other assumptions, without asking ourselves, am I reinforcing an idea that's my own based on my own lens? That's where it can then not be as useful. So that's the first step, is asking yourself, I wonder if. Okay. Then the next step really is looking at the data. So always keeping organizational data, or, you know, data within your company recent, and making sure that it's really inclusive of lots of non-dominant groups. And that way you've got a full representation of data to always refer to. We also look at solutions of pulling each other up. So that idea of, hey, you could have said that in a different way. And that can be confronting, but also really powerful. And then we've got some tests. So there is a test done by Harvard University, and you can find it online. If you just Google the Harvard test, and it's a quiz, and basically it comes up with a lot of scenarios based, and it tells you where some of your biases might be. So the last one I'd say is also thinking about tricking your brain, because as we've established, biases can be so quick and they can be so automatic. We can be doing them without knowing. So when you are tricking your brain, then you might get a better outcome. For example, putting up images of stereotypes that are not common. So that could be, for example, you know, people in roles that they don't usually play, or people, you know, mixing up gender roles. So the idea of that helps to then trick your brain and encourages you to have a growth mindset and a different way of thinking. Yeah, so I'd say those are mainly the solutions.
What makes you hopeful that teaching people and training can help reduce unconscious bias?
So, yeah, I feel really hopeful that, you know, racism as a concept is not so alive and well in Australia anymore. And we've got a push to people in our society who are much more aware in general. There's a lot of people who are wanting to make change. And the good news is that it can be very small. So it does start with you. You can be a champion within your workplace, and you can be surprised as how quickly you can spread that across your organization. Just starting with one small change can lead to people feeling more and more comfortable to be themselves and not feel like they're going to be judged for that.
Great. So how can people register for the workshop?
So if you're interested in the topic of unconscious bias, it's part of our cultural awareness or cultural competence training. So we've got some other topics that we include as well. You can go to our website and click on the What We Do tab, and that will take you to the training tab, and you can find much more information there. So you can easily contact us on the website. You could also send us an email if you like as well, and we can give you some more information.
Thanks, Andrea.
Thank you.
Thank you to all the community voices who shared their personal stories and experiences for this special podcast in recognition of International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. And thank you to Andrea for providing valuable tips on how we can counteract unconscious biases and discrimination. In the podcast notes, you'll find links to resources like the Harvard Implicit Association Test to explore your own unconscious biases. And there are also details on unconscious bias training workshops offered by the Center for Culture, Ethnicity and Health, or CEH for short. That's all for now. Thank you for listening and being a part of this important conversation.